example of that would be such as Russia claiming that the UFOs were theirs, and this could put a burden on our defense systems. There is an ongoing investigation, even though Project Blue Book is closed, and recent developments have led us to take another look at our organization's claims that UFOs, at least a small percentage of them, could be from outer space. Now, there's a lot of things that you can say about this to fight it and just disagree with these comments. But what we are finding is that the CIA and the intelligence agencies of the United States very well could be the cause itself of the UFO phenomenon. The percentile of bona fide objects is relatively small. Did you want me to take a few minutes and get into this?
Go right ahead. Okay. I tell you what, before you do, because I know you're getting in, going to launch into something, let me launch into something first and then clear the decks for you there. Phoenix, Arizona, and Bill, you're laying some different kind of information on us, those of us that are interested in what's going on in the world up there, and that you seem to indicate that you have a considerable amount of doubt if there are such things as flying saucers that are piloted by alien beings, but we have some flying saucers that may not be alienly controlled.
Yes, let me regress just for a moment here. Now, to set the record perfectly straight, our organization and myself, which I'm the director of, believe that UFOs are real.
Uh-huh.
However, there is a very small database of good information. Yes, there's thousands of sightings, but through that morass of information, there's a signal-to-noise separation that's just unbelievable. And when a person takes the time to really investigate any UFO incident, you'll find it to be a lot different than it was reported, than it was told to you, and what you first heard. And this is the thing that we're trying to do to find out, actually, what do we have in the way of real information. And there's approximately two groups of people. You have the believers who each UFO event is a real experience, and then the non-believer to whom each sighting is pure nonsense. And in between there is the truth, we believe.
Uh-huh.
And by regressing again, as I said, we have these thousands of UFO databases, in other words, these reports, but there's not one qualitative fact to support this ETH, this extraterrestrial hypothesis. There are hundreds of cases of UFO landings with humanoid creatures, but the majority of these instances are single witness events void of supportive data. There are too many UFO reports of landings, whereas if all the events were to be reported, there would be a factor of at least between 100 and 1,000 added to the existing numeric base. And by that I'm saying with all these reports of landings, these are just the ones that randomly happen. If they were all reported, there's just too many landings for us not to know more about UFOs. The data appears to support the theory of persons who have contact with UFO, that they're selected rather than the experience just being random chance. We also know that the CIA as early as 1949 has been collecting UFO data, and that the intelligence agencies appear to be directing and controlling all government investigations into this subject. Years after the closure of the Air Force's Project Blue Book, which I mentioned previously, representatives of the CIA are checking with the Air Force officials immediately after an occurrence of a UFO sightings. And then numerous FOIA requests and these documents that we've obtained from the lawsuit and from these requests indicate the government's concern. But this concern appears to be directed towards how much material, if any, was obtained on the incident as opposed to what scientific value the event contained. And there's also a cursory evidence that cattle mutilations are interrelated to the UFO phenomena. We have recent reports from law enforcement officers that indicate that observations have been made of all black helicopters with darkened windows, noise suppression rotor blades, and high quantities of electronic gear inside the aircraft. And all this has a lot of significance, and we feel that the American public is being manipulated from reasons ranging from the political to the psychological with the UFO. And it takes a lot for us to go out on the limb to say this.
Yeah, it does.
Believe me.
Have you got a hypothesis of what would be the motivation toward the government involving itself in cattle mutilations and perpetuating UFO stories and all of this sort of thing? Why? Why would they do that?
Okay, if you go back a couple years and everybody think about this, there was a lot of debasing publicity on the military intelligence community because of their clandestine involvement with drug testing and unsuspected humans and germ warfare experimentation with animals, such as all the sheep that died. And it's no wonder that the executive branch ordered all testing of this nature stopped immediately. This order, we feel, stopped all obvious testing, but most likely did not stop the U.S. government from testing in complete secrecy. We have to continue on with this because the Warsaw decorative manner would be the scenario that is presently transpiring with the cattle mutilations. Helicopters, which are generally reported as strange lights in the distance, are being used for nerve gas germ warfare testing on animals, we feel. The surgical removal of the animal's organs serves two purposes. It creates a shroud of secrecy and mystery and serves the scientific purposes of additional evaluation of the animal's blood and delicate organs in a laboratory environment. And this is one thing that we believe is being overlooked in this whole UFO cattle mutilations event. And those things are occurring. They are real. I have seen them myself, and I think it's time that the community, the scientific community, just take a look at the data and see if there can't be some interrelation put to this.
Well, I've never heard that before. Now, you're saying that it is the feeling of your group that particularly in the cases of cattle mutilation, that this is something that's being carried on by the government itself as a cover-up of ongoing testing, which they had to stop in nerve gas warfare and other things of that nature, right?
Yeah, but the reason for UFOs is a manipulative device ranging from political to psychological. For example, if you wanted to test some of your restricted air defense zones and you didn't want to have a war game, you could have a UFO event staged just to see how effective our defense systems were. And as far as that goes, how effective the Russians were or whatever. A UFO appears to be a nuts and bolts piece of hardware, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's from outer space. And we're just trying to convince everybody that you've got to tackle this thing in some kind of a logic pattern. By all of us screaming that UFOs are from outer space, and I'll be open-minded and say that some of them very well might be, we're not going to get anywhere because of the ridicule syndrome that exists in this country with the higher educated person.
Mm-hmm.
Who is more interested in finding out what it is before we start saying, yes, it's from outer space and all these other things. And that's why I believe that these contact stories, although I find them very interesting and psychologically moving, I think they're really hurting the entire UFO movement, especially that of the scientific. And I don't mean that in a debasing way. I'm just saying this is what we're confronted with all the time. Because to get our point across, this lawsuit, we have got to have the support of the media.
Right.
And the media, of course, to be very honest, and again, this is the night for this, really doesn't want that type of a story. Okay, there were UFOs in 1975 hovering over our missile bases. That is not as interesting as somebody with all these elaborate pictures and contacteeism and the little creatures and all this. So this is what we're faced with, and it's very frustrating.
I can see that you have your hands full there, Bill, and that's a new side to the UFO story ongoing. I have never heard it before, and I'm delighted you gave it to us. Would you be interested in talking to some of our callers about that?
Sure would.
All right, let's see what we got on the line. KABC, you're on with Bill Jenkins and Bill Spaulding.
Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I was calling earlier, but sorry here, I'm a little...
Well, now just calm down, Joe, and
yeah.
Get
okay.
you out together.
Yeah, he had answered one of my questions earlier about the photographs, because I have seen the book.
Oh, the Pleiades book, yes.
Yes, I have, about the Pleiades. And I thought it was quite a book there, and they didn't say too much in it. But that was, as I said, he had answered my questions. And one of the other questions I wanted to ask is more or less on the area of...
Go ahead now.
Oh, yeah, it's about... Someone Else Is on the Moon?
Yes.
The book by Keogh?
No. That book was written by George Leonard.
George Leonard. Well, I have the book, but I don't remember the name.
Yeah, that's a fascinating book.
I have a fairly strong telescope, and every once in a while I'd look up there and see some little flashes now and then. I'm not sure. It's sort of a crazy thing. No, but I've got the book, as I said before. I've seen the pictures there. And somehow they don't look right. You know, they just more or less look.
Well,
like you don't see anything.
That's one of the reasons that Bill is on tonight.
Yes.
And by the way, Wendell Stevens is the one who suggested that we get Bill on so that he could bring forth his viewpoints on it. Wendell and Lee will be on a little bit later tonight, and I'll try to recant to them some of the things that have been said about those photographs. I imagine that they have heard them all, but maybe not. And maybe they'll get on before. While Bill is still here, because they can go back and forth with it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right?
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for your call.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right. He didn't have a question for you there. What about in your group? Have you found anything about the moon going on, Bill? Hello there. All right. Have you, did you hear those questions, Bill?
No, I was cut off the ear.
Oh, that was good. I did it with my finger, my magic finger. I should know better.
It's only been the third time tonight.
That's it. It's been one of those nights. Now, this was a young man who had seen the book, and he thought that the pictures looked a little odd, and he said that you answered some questions for him. And he was asking some questions that come up quite often in the show about George Leonard's books, If Somebody Else Is on the Moon, and I wonder if you had any comment on some of the stories that are coming out about that.
Yes, the UFO story, per se, has left Earth and gone more skyward. And one of the places where there's a lot of information, a lot of books being written right now, is mysterious happenings on the moon. There's people who have said they've seen formations through telescopes. The astronauts, or at least the astronauts have reported, purportedly have said that they have seen various things and photographed objects. Again, if you take the previous scenario that I told you about, there is some work that was done a couple years ago called Alternative 3. And Alternative 3 is a book that was written by Leslie Watkins, I believe. And inside there's some things that we have checked out as far as we can that suggest that the United States is working on colonizing the moon. And I don't mean this from a science fiction standpoint, but I mean for specific research programs.
They're actually doing that now?
Reportedly, this is what's going on. Now, we have asked for a whole round of new documents that are related to this through NASA and other organizations that purportedly have this information. And once we get something substantiated, you've got to have the documentation before you can make any statements.
Well, that would require an awful lot of space launchings, which are very difficult to hide.
Well, I'm talking about something on a small scale basis. Most of these reports have talked about seeing mysterious towers or seeing lights, or even some people reported that there was craft up there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you have to put this thing in its perspective. A story up there is not any different than one down here, unless you have all that information. One, how do we know it actually happened? Two, what are the real facts? And three, what do we have to support these facts? And all I'm trying to advocate right now that there is some theories going around that the government is indeed involved in something like this. And I can't quantify this, but they're even talking about, well, they realize that Earth is having a massive problem with carbon dioxide poisoning, and there's supposed to be all kinds of government documents and reports. And if we can get our hands on that, well, then that'll possibly open up some more information to some answers to the UFO mystery.
And you think you can do that in this lawsuit, maybe?
Well, through that, an FOI request, or we're going to find out how the doors get shut on us. And, again, it's the only alternative we have right now, or any UFO researcher has, is for getting information. The government has it. And you have to obtain it through the legal methods that are available to all American citizens.
That's about the only way you can do it. Let's get back to your comments on things that have been fascinating tonight, Bill, in just a moment.
This house looks...
where those UFOs may be coming from, and they may not be all that extraterrestrial in the long run. What other information have you been able to uncover you think you were going to be able to get?
Well, what we'd like to get is to clarify some of these stories going around, which there's 30 pretty good reports of crashed discs.
Yes, we had Leonard Stringfield on one night, and
right.
He was going into those.
I thought Len did a very credible job in putting that data together. But this is something that really has to be substantiated also, because it's one thing to go on a radio show, television show, and say the things that I'm saying or anybody else is saying, but when it comes time, your day in court, you've got to substantiate all this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to, unitedly, the people who are interested in UFOs, get our hands on the solidest data that we can. So we are going to pursue those efforts also with the crash disk, and we are running into one wall after another. Now, are those stories, are they stage events, or are we really being visited by some type of a robot, android, little creature that is here for God only knows what kind of purposes?
Mm-hmm.
Other things that need to be clarified is, if UFOs are doing what they appear to be doing from these documents to our defense system, whereas in 1975, as an example, UFOs hovered within 100 feet of our most prestigious missile systems at various NORAD bases and defense systems, there's absolutely nothing that we could do about it. I think that the American people should be told about the UFO,
mm-hmm.
that the official stand is that UFOs officially don't exist, and people more or less just go on happily forgetting about it. But this could cause a very serious problem. Now, this country, if you think about it, the past couple weeks was almost put on red alert by a computer error.
Twice.
Right. And other things have happened from some of our spy-in-the-sky satellites, which the American public really doesn't know about, where an explosion in Russia from a refinery was interpreted as an IBM launch against this country. Now, if we're sitting in a situation like that with this Cold War situation, I think we need to rectify and clarify the total UFO situation so that some type of a mistake can't be made. And if indeed the United States government is behind the UFO phenomena, then we really have got to be concerned about what is the motivation, what type of a plot. If it is just to cover certain germ warfare testing or pose a psychological threat to a foreign country to let them think that we have advanced technology or vice versa, or who knows what the possibilities could be. I think that it is one of the more important problems that we all need to resolve. And the only way we're going to do it is jointly with public support.
You know, one of the things we pointed out often on this show, Bill, is that we formed a government, we the people of the United States, to serve us.
Right.
And if it's not serving us, then we kick them out and run the buggers out of office or whatever it is. And we have that right to know what they're doing.
Well, unfortunately, if you look at that also in its true perspective, the intelligence agency does not change office every 4 to 8 years.
No, it just stays right on in there. And
there
the problem,
forever.
And the problem is in the bureaucracy, really.
Right.
The military and civilian bureaucracy that keeps on keeping on with whatever it is they're keeping on with, and we have every right to know more about it.
But if I could just say a couple other things here in conclusion, we are striving to carry on with the lawsuit and this Freedom Information Act as far as we can go and get every bit of information on UFO sightings, events, and things that I briefly discussed tonight. Secondly, we're going to continue on with space-age technology developments from the aerospace community to evaluate UFO secondary evidence, which there are 11 evidences that we are looking at, ranging from ground markings to the photographic. Also, we are going to continue on with selected UFO cases, those that meet our criteria of daylight cases with multiple witnesses, because they tend to give the best indication of good supportive information.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if everything goes together, hopefully we'll be able to get some press releases here and get some things out to the public that can at least halfway be backed up by some documentation substantiation. But I can only stress to everybody who's interested in UFOs that you keep an open mind, that I don't want to say that the GSW has shut off the possibility of ETH, but again, if you look at the data, it's very, very slim, and there's a lot of things against it. I believe that UFOs are real, and it is one of the major problems that we are faced with in the 80s.
Well, when you get any of that data, you call me.
I certainly
because
will.
We'll put it on immediately. We have a rather large audience that listens to this program from time to time, and I'm delighted each and every one of them are there.
And anybody that wants to get in touch with us, they can write GSW in Phoenix, and we'll be glad to...
What's your address there, Bill?
Okay, it's GSW Incorporated, 13238 North 7th Drive, Phoenix, Arizona, 85029.
Okay, very good. I appreciate you taking time out on a Saturday night to join us. And as again, we have been kind of boggled by what you had to say, Bill, and it's highly appreciated. And those people who, if you missed that, I'll give you that address a little bit later, or you can write me and I'll send it on to you. It's quite a group that they have going there, and we appreciate their input. KABC time is about 8 minutes of 11 o'clock. I think I pushed them in. Are you there? Well, we'll try to get them. They just got on the phone, just as everybody else got off, and we'll stay with them during the course of the next hour. I know there are a lot of you that do want to ask some questions, and we'll keep this thing going, right on up till midnight. I want to remind you that Tom Hall is going to be on tonight with a very, very interesting subject. He's going to be talking about Mount St. Helens and all of the volcanoes and things that have been going up there. Can we expect to see more of that volcanic activity? His guest should fascinate you, as that subject matter has fascinated us from time to time. Here on KABC, I'm Bill Jenkins. Open Mind program tonight.
Hey, hello, Bill. How are you?
I am super. I wish you'd been on earlier. We had some detractors on for you.
Well, I wish you'd been on to hear what they had to say. I do have Bill Salving's report from GSW here. Did his replies seem to follow the pattern of the report, or did he
take off on a different tangent.
Well, he just simply said that the analysis they had of the photographs, and I think he said there were 20 or 25 that they had looked at, there was evidence of strings and that they were models and some technical things using what he said was very sophisticated equipment that they use that just said that the pictures were not real.
Okay. I have copies of the 13 frames that GSW analyzed. There were not 20 or 25. There were exactly 13. I don't know how many he analyzed, but in his report he said that he analyzed 10 of them.
Okay.
What I'm looking at here are prints that were made. They're about five generations down the line. These are photographs made with a 35 millimeter handheld camera with slide film in it through the plastic in the album pages of Billy Meyer's photo album, which were prints made from negatives made from the original transparencies. So we're quite a few generations down the line before they started to work.
Uh-huh.
I do have his main points here in his report were that multiple exposures of UFOs almost certainly make them a probable hoax because we don't have many cases of multiple photo experiences by others. And my only argument there is that there's a lot of firsts and a lot of bizarre things. However, I can think of at least six other cases that do have multiple photographic experiences in the case that are almost incontestably valid. The case going on over Charleston is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others. And you've met Bill Herman. You had him on the line there, so you know a little about him.
Yes, we had him on earlier tonight.
The next major point that I see in the report here is his statement that the clarity of image denies the legitimacy of the photograph. That usually UFO photographs are inarticulate lights, I'm quoting that, or discs or other objects devoid of detail. And yes, there are a lot of such photographs. Probably 80 or 90% of the photographs alleged to be UFO photographs are exactly that. But in his own testing, he's eliminated a large percentage of those as misperceptions and possible hoaxes. Another point in his report here, am I following the pattern that he was...
Yeah, you're going
fairly close.
You're going right down the line with him.
The next point was that he worked with 10 original photographs. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, he didn't have any original photographs, and all of the originals were shot on diapositive film as slide transparencies. The next point, major point in his report here, is that the sharpness of the UFO image compared to other features in the picture, which are extremely out of focus, indicates the closeness to the camera. Now, you have a lot of listeners who have the books in their hands, and if they'll turn to any page in the book, they'll see that all of the image data throughout the photograph is in about the same degree of sharpness to the human eye. We find differences when we put it in the computers, though. We find a gradient sharpness from the focal plane of the camera out to the horizon. But they are all apparently sharp, so I don't know where that comes from, except I'm looking at the 10 pictures that he analyzed, and there's only four of the 10, and of the 13 that he had to work with, there were only four that had background information in them at all. So it may be coming, his problem may be coming from the sampling that he was working with, and as I say, there were quite a few generations down the line. I've got three or four more points here. You want to talk about something else and come back to us?
Well, go ahead. Let's get that out of the way because they were taking some good shots at you, and we want to get both sides of this coin out tonight.
All right. The next major item in his report is a, quote, suggestion of a linear structure above one of the objects. I don't know which picture he refers to, but I can see what he calls linear structures on several of them, and these are the striation lines in the plastic that the prints were mounted in from which the slides were shot.
Oh, so I see what you're saying. That was part of the mounting of the photograph that they took photographs of.
Well, all plastic sheets have they have lines like movie film when it's pulled through a reel enough times you get streaks on it.
Right.
And the plastic sheets have these, and if they're photographed in sunlight, those streaks pick up a shadow. He's probably got a lot of such artifacts, he calls them, and he's probably got more than vertical ones. He's probably got angle ones and horizontal ones also, but mostly in one direction as the plastic flows on the sheet.
Well, have you confronted Bill Spaulding with this information or rebuttal to...
No, I never have. I just got the report. report, a copy of his report in my hands here a few days ago, and I was just reading it just before we went on the air here. Another point he makes is that the spatial placement of the UFOs is questioned. And by that he means the distance of the UFO from the lens of the camera. When we look at them during the computers, we give them spatial relationship by three separate methods, and then there are some others too. But basically, we work on the blur factor. We study the amount of blur of the object with relationship to objects near or beyond it. And the rate, the amount of blur beyond the infinity setting or beyond the true focal plane of the camera can be detected by a computer. And the fact that it's a very exact science, and it's reduced to a formula based on shock lines that on which the cruise missile system is based. And this is this formula and this procedure is the thing that keeps the cruise missile from running into objects and structures. It can tell exactly how far objects are ahead of the cruise missile, and we're using the same formulas to determine distance from the lens. We can set all of that aside and look at it in terms of gray factor. And again, the amount of, this is if we have anything suspended in the air, smoke, moisture, or anything like that. And the amount of gray will tell us whether the object is nearer or farther than any other object in the picture. And this will give us a spatial relationship of the object with any other objects in the picture, the UFO with any other objects in the picture. And this will generally agree with the analysis we made on the blur factor. Now, we can set both of those aside. Incidentally, when we're looking at the blur factor, we can also tell from the amount of blur which direction the object is moving and about how fast it's moving, because there's a difference in the shock lines generated around the edges of the object. The shock lines are closer together in the direction of motion and farther apart on in the trailing edge. And the relationship between the shock lines on one side and the shock lines on the other tells us exactly how fast it's going. We can even tell which direction it's moving, and we're doing this from a two-dimensional photograph. Now, we can set all of that aside again, and we'll study it again based on chroma shift of the small corona around the color granules in the color emulsion. The principle here is that the nearer light travels, or the shorter the distance light travels from the object to the lens, the more red it will have in it. The further it travels, it will shade the blue and then the green on the horizon. So it's a red shift value that a computer can distinguish, and it'll put everything in spatial relationship, one thing with another, after we take out the red shift caused by re-photographing, which is a little bit difficult, but it can be done. We can also look at these things in terms of light scattering that tells us approximately how big the radius of curve is that's reflecting the light. And this can tell us whether it's a small model close to the camera or a large model further away, and several other things.
Well, basically, you're telling me, Wendell, then, that number one, that Bill Spaulding and his group at the Ground Saucer Watch were using as their test photographs, photographs of photographs that were taken, puts them down four or five generations from the original at best.
I would say they were using photographs of photographs of photographs.
And then secondly, they weren't using quite the sophisticated kind of technology that you and your group have been using in testing and analyzing those photographs.
I don't think they even got into it, because I went out to Spatial Data Systems at Goleta, California, who does their work for them on contract, to find out exactly what they were doing, and they were only doing four basic steps. The rest is extrapolation of those steps.
I see.
The spatial data people told us that they didn't consider this a detailed analysis. It was they called it a cursory analysis. We had to go into a seminar in San Diego of all computer designers, or most of the major computer designers and computer graphics people, to get a consensus of opinion of how to proceed, and we invented as we went designing new techniques for the report that Jim Delatorre came up with.
All right. In a moment, I want to lay some of the things that Coleman von Kubeski had to say about the Billy Meyer experience. If I may, he was on earlier this evening, and that's always quite interesting to be with
Coleman. Back to you in a second.
A number of things to say about the testing that his organization, IQFON, had done on the photographs that they had. It wasn't quite as scientific and as technical. We didn't have a good connection to Coleman earlier, but he was talking about one of the photographs in which Billy Myers claimed that he and three others were inside the photograph, just wouldn't leave enough room for four people to get inside. Are you familiar with what photograph that may be?
Well, there's a whole series of photographs. I think there's 24 shot roll that have been double exposed that show as many as 7 people in some of the frames with the UFO above them. But we can separate those 2 pictures at a computer, and one is a picture of the people standing on a hill, and another is a picture of the UFO flying over a valley. That roll was used the second time when Mr. Meyer shot up another roll and thought he had an extra roll, and he put the wrong one in the camera and reshot one of them over again, losing those 25 pictures. But they did come back on slides. We have had them printed. They are double exposure. There is no evidence at all that he ever photographed or ever claimed to have photographed pictures of the UFO flying over the heads of people.
Mm-hmm. He also talked about some of the claims of Billy Meyer, getting into area really that just can't be tested, that he is like the 14th disciple of Jesus and has had a number of rather incredible experiences with time travel and is working very hard to discredit Christianity and Judaism.
Well, I don't know where he got the information. I've been there 39 days total, cumulative time, living in the house with a man, and I haven't encountered any such information. I would prefer that he answer that. There are a lot of bizarre things here, but I've certainly never heard that come up.
I think he was referring to a booklet that Billy Meyer may put out, the Waterman Times or something like
Skimmer,
that.
Yeah, Skimmer there once a month.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And which some reference was made to that kind of thing.
Well, I have those books, but I can't read them in German. I am not aware of any such statement made in the book at all. I will try to find out, but I have never heard this, and I can't comment on it. It's new to me.
And he was also critical about one of Billy Meyer's statements and a photograph on one of his trips that he went into the Dahl universe and took a picture of the Eye of God. Do you know anything about that?
I know where he's getting that statement, and that's a misunderstanding by a man called Hans Jakob, who is running for public office in a rural district, a state of Switzerland, and Switzerland is rural in that part of the country, and UFOs are not popular, and this man is trying to dissociate himself from earlier contact with the group by making several such statements. The photograph that he's talking about, I've never seen, and I don't know anything about it. I talked to Mr. Hans Jakob, and he told me that such a picture had been taken, but he wasn't able to support it when I was there. And I'm wondering what Mr. Ivankovich saw, if he saw the Eye of God.
Well, that was what he was wondering.
Oh, well.
All right, let's get to some callers here who may have some questions for you, Wendell, about the Pleiadian thing. And we have some other comments I would like your comments on from Bill Spaulding that are quite incredible about cattle mutations and some of the other things that may be happening in this whole UFO phenomenon. You know, you and a friend can be the guest of The Gap and KABC to the All-Star Game with Dinner on the Town.
Questions for the Colonel.
Okay.
The first is, I would like to know, I understand that Jim Lorenzen from Tucson had at first endorsed the book, and I believe I read in the Zetetic, or which is now the Skeptical Inquirer, that he's withdrawn his endorsement and says that Billy Meyer is making models of UFOs. I'd like to hear his comment about that. The other thing is that I had the pleasure of meeting Britt Nielsen Elders in Phoenix not too long ago. And in our conversation, she mentioned that John Glenn had 4 separate incidents. And I'd like to hear those. Britt did not go into it at the time.
Did you catch that question, Wendell?
I didn't. Yes, clearly. What was the question, the first part?
First question was in reference to Jim Lorenzen of APRO, saying that he first supported the book, and now he has withdrawn his support, saying that that they were models. And there was another part that our caller, Mary, had on a recent trip to Phoenix met Britt. Britt Elders, and in that conversation, Britt had mentioned that John Glenn had 4 different experiences, and that was about all she said, and she was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Okay, well, I can tell. I know about Jim Lorenzen's statements. We never said that he endorsed the book, and he never said that he endorsed the book until after it was out, and then he said that we had claimed that he endorsed it when we never did. If you look in the book, the only reference made to Jim Lorenzen is the fact that he heads the organization APRO, which is the oldest, one of the oldest.
established UFO research organizations in continuous existence in the world. The only thing that might have been construed as an endorsement was a thing that Jim Lorenzen himself wrote that we published on the flyer that said, it looks to me like there's too much evidence here to safely ignore. And that's all. I don't know how anybody calls that an endorsement. I don't know how Jim calls it, claims that we consider that an endorsement. And that was not included in the book. That was only included in the flyer mailed out to the ATRO members.
And what about the John Glenn incident?
I can't answer about the John Glenn incident, but I do have another comment on models. In John Foster Watcher's conclusions, item 5 says here that there were signs of manufacture on the models, such as bolts with sizes too large, bolts and rivets with sizes too large in proportion to the model's physical size. Now, anybody that has the book, if they can look at any of those pictures and find any evidence of rivets or bolts anywhere in the pictures, and I have blown those pictures to 20 by 30 inches, where in some pictures I have the spacecraft model from 4 to 5 inches across and still can't find, with a magnifying glass, any evidence of mating lines, rivets, or bolts.
Okay, Mary, does that help you?
Hello?
Yeah, Mary, did that answer your question?
Pretty well, thank you.
Okay, Mary, thank you very much for your call. You know, June is...
About 10 years ago to Thornton Page and the director of the Van Vleck Observatory at Wesleyan University at that time in response to a New York Times article by Walter Sullivan describing a UFO symposium held by Dr. Page at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the article there had been discussion of the possibility that certain files of the defunct Project Blue Book may have been destroyed, presumably by the Air Force. Sullivan indicated that Dr. Page believed that the files may have contained, among other things, reports involving secret military projects. There was a book that came out in 1956 in German. It was called Brighter Than a Thousand Suns, Heller auf Tausend Sonnen. The English translation was 1958. And Robert Jungk, J-U-N-G-K, was the author. He had described in a footnote in reference to the indifference in Germany during the war of Hitler to research in natural science, that there was there were projects, and I'll just read the very brief, that the Air Ministry had been conducting experiments, and they had designed aircraft, Delta, Triangular, and Flying Discs. The first of these flying saucers, as they were later called, circular in shape with a diameter of some 45 yards, were built by Schriever, Habermoel, and Mita, these aerodynamic specialists, first airborne on February 14, 1945, over Prague, and reached in 3 minutes a height of nearly 8 miles, at a flying speed of 1250 miles per hour, which was doubled in subsequent tests. It's believed that after the war, Habermoel fell into the hands of the Russians. Mita developed at a later date similar so-called flying saucers at A.V. Rowan Company for the United States. I wrote to Page because it seems to me that if Jung's information was correct, that the Blue Book files may very well have contained reports of later U.S. refinements of the original German work, and perhaps these so-called UFOs were not so unidentified after all. If the Air Force intentionally kept Condon's group, there was the Condon report at that time, ignorant of such research, then perhaps the study was futile from the outset, and possibly with the taxpayers, the losers. Thornton Page wrote back to me, and he wrote a reply at that time. My letter was forwarded to him in Houston. He was an observer at the Apollo shots. And he wrote a handwritten quick note to me saying that he finds the item in Young's book interesting and tends to strengthen the allegation that the Air Force had kept parts of its UFO investigation secret. But he said he was on the Robertson panel in 1952,
mm-hmm.
and they had full access to top secret files in all three services. He said that they found no evidence of foreign developments in U.S. Air Force development of a flying saucer except for one project that had been abandoned. And then he said that, in wrapping it up, he was sure that any aircraft of the type that Jungk describes could not account for the large number of reports. They're fairly certain that such aircraft would have been picked up by our radar nets. So I'm curious to know, and in fact, if you were speaking to Bill Spaulding earlier, I heard,
mm-hmm.
if in fact this was just a long series of developments, of the refinements of the German work that had been done during the war,
and perhaps I spoke to some friends at Edwards, and they told me a few months ago, in fact, that for the past 30 years or more, many small companies have been engaged in so-called saucer research with projects that largely went nowhere. These things may very well have been flown around this country or in remote parts.
Okay, well, Wendell, do you have some comment on that?
Well, it's a little out of my field. I've heard rumors of German research in 1944 on circular aircraft. The research at the Weisberg was done in the Black Forest, and nobody knows who moved the facilities away. We don't know whether the Russians got them, whether we did, or whether they just fled the country before anybody got to them. There doesn't seem to be an accurate record of where they went.
We do have indication, I think, that one of those Russian circular craft crashed in Norway back in the 50s, and it was determined that that was Russian in origin.
Yes, I read that report.
Also, you got to remember, too, that Thornton Page is still very, very active in the government's evident quash of UFO information.
Yeah.
And works mightily at that right now from Houston.
One quick note. I have a copy of, it's a high school publication. I teach science, physics in high school. Science and Math Weekly. And it's an old copy, and there's a photograph of with a caption that says, excuse me, I have a call. Saucers such as the test model pictured above have been in production for several years. It shows a small one with some men around it.
Mm-hmm.
A Belgian model is expected to reach speeds of 180 miles per hour. The United States and Canada jointly built the Avro, A-V-R-O, in the late 50s. It's now on display in the Army's Transportation Museum in Virginia. So again, there seems to be this, on the one hand, this trail of developments. And on the other hand, when you speak to people about these things, and I've spoken to some people at JPL, they claim complete ignorance of such developments.
You got any comments on that, Wendell?
Well, there were at least two versions of the Avro project, but they had problems with stability, and supposedly scrapped the project. I don't know whether that was a cover for something else or not, but those models are at Wright-Patterson now in the museum there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Joe?
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your call. KABC Times, 22 minutes of midnight. Hey, Alan, welcome to the Open Mind program.
Welcome, Bill. Well, hello, I should say.
Hello there. Have you had a chance to listen to some of the things we've been talking about tonight?
Yes, I have, and just want to give you a little bit of background, very, very brief before I
say hello to Wendell Stevens.
Hello, Wendell.
Hello, how are you?
Well, you're a bit faint, but let me get right in. It's a problem that's been with us all evening. I want to say that I'm a member of the Aetherius Society, so we get that straight off.
Yes.
And that we are what may be termed as a contact group. But this does not mean that we have thrown reason, discrimination, or intelligence out of the door. Now, I have in front of me the Bill Myers UFO contact book, Contact from the Pleiades. And one of the things that, looking at it with a reasonable amount of intelligence, the question that came up in my mind was that surely there was the April the 14th, 1976 incident of 22 attempts by a Swiss Mirage fighter to buzz the UFO in question, the picture of which appears in this book. But nowhere is there any investigative reporting as to what the Swiss Army or the Swiss Air Force had to say about this. I mean, here is something where we could really have jumped on the bandwagon to get some real information out from official sources, or at least get something. I mean, are they going to deny it completely? Have they denied it, in fact?
Wendell, did you hear that?
Yes, sir. We've covered that same question twice before on your program, but here it is again. The Swiss Army is a very secretive organization. It's very highly organized, like the Israeli Army. They don't let out any secrets. They will not allow an investigation of that Swiss Mirage jet fighter pass on the UFO. They will not let us go to the base they came from. We do know what base it came from. We have talked to a ground maintenance man,
uh-huh,
who said that it took 2 weeks to repair the electrical system of the jet, but we don't dare to reveal his name because it would be dangerous to him. They will not allow any investigation into that area. They say that we must pose all the questions to them, to their superior office, in writing. We've done that. The answer back is that we must prove a need to know satisfactory to the Swiss government before they'll discuss any matters pertaining to military affairs and exotic objects.
Uh-huh. I mean, don't you have you met this attitude of if the official sources continue to bury their heads in the sand that they feel that the problem will go away.
I think they're trying to sweep it under the rug until they have a better answer.
The only thing I want to say is that we've found, especially in the Aetherius Society, where we go back as far as 55, we know about the problems with photographs, and that's why one of the proofs, and I'll say that again, proofs of the contact of the Aetherius Society, was a direct eyewitness sighting involving over 23,000 people in Australia. So we know all about the denials of government, but how do you think this UFO information is going to get much more of a broader base as far as the public is concerned, to really get information from official sources?